thank you very much for joining us for the postcast. It's the Racing Post's weekend preview with Bruce Millington, Stuart Riley and Keith Melrose. And we've got a very special Saturday. It's the 12th edition of Kipco British Champions Day. Always one of the highlights of the racing year. And we've got some absolutely cracking contests. And of course, superstar Baid bidding goodbye, aiming to make it 100% all the way through from his very first race to his last. And then he's off to stud. We'll see whether the lads are in the mood to take him on. I'm sure they will have plenty of strong views on the other five races. We'll see what else they like this weekend. Jumps fans, there's some decent action on Sunday. We've got the Durham National, and I think Keith might have sussed one for that. And then, of course, we will have the Naps. But we will start with the 125 at Ascot on Saturday, first race on Champions Day, and it's the Kipco British Champions Long Distance Cup, Group 2, over 2 miles, and Trushan is bidding to win this for the third time in 3 years. I am on racingpost.com looking at best odds. Click on that and you get the best prices from 7 leading bookmakers. And they don't just tell you where the best value is. They'll also tell you what the best place terms are. In this race, because there's only 8 runners, it's a 5th to 3. But there will be variations. I will bring those in throughout the show. Anyway, best prices as things stand. 15-8, Trushan. And then we've got 5-2, Elder off. 4-1, Waterville. 4-1? Are you joking? No, thank you. We'll see if the boys agree with me that that is one of the worst prices on the card. 10-1, Coltrane. 12, Quickthorn. 22, Trawlerman. 35, Wordsworth. And 66, Stratton. So if they all stand their ground, we do have each-way potential. Will the boys be looking at each-way route, or are they going to go straight in with a win-only bet? Let's find out. Stuart Riley.
Yeah, I'm going straight in with a win-only bet because I keep looking at this race and I can't work out if Trushan is just the greatest price of the day, or his last two runs have been slightly underwhelming. Obviously, he ran well at Goodwood behind Kyprios and Stradivarius, two very good horses. Last time at Doncaster, it was not what you wanted to see, and I guess that's factored into his price here. But he was even money this day last year to beat Stradivarius, which is a much better race than this, and he was half the price he is here. And you just know his entire year has revolved around this race. The one that I liked against him was Eldarov, but the St. Ledger was his plan, and this is an afterthought. Trushan has, his whole season has revolved around this race, and I think, yeah, he might have been slightly underwhelming at Doncaster, but I suspect that that was to put him cherry ripe for today. And at 15-8 to beat, as you say, a market in which Waterville is 4-1 as a, you know, as a 107 rated horse. Yes, he won the Irish Cesarewitch well and came from last to first, but he got a brilliant ride up the inside rail. Not like he had to go round them all, and he won it like a 110 rated horse off a mark of 99, not like a 120 rated horse, which you'd need to be to get in the frame here. So I just think that Trushan is probably an incredibly generous price given the opposition and a disappointing run last time that you have to forgive. But I think Alan King is more than up to the task.
Okay, you were having a very heated debate with yourself early on, and I wasn't quite sure which side you're coming down on, but you're very much in the Trushan camp. Stu, it'd definitely be firm enough, it'd definitely be soft enough, won't it? I mean, it's good to soft now. I don't think it's much rain forecast. They may well water, but you wouldn't worry that King will walk it and go, it's a little bit too firm, no?
No, I don't think so. It was good to soft when he won the race last year. And I just think that they've been a bit easier on the ground this year. They've not liked firm in the title, but I think they'd run him on good. It's the last run of the season. You're not gonna jar him up and ruin any other targets. So I strongly suspect he will be running.
Okay. Stu really fancies Trushan. Do you agree, Keith?
I don't particularly. I think Trushan, you know, he's got that big run at Newcastle behind him that he won the handicap, the Northumberland Plate 120. But besides that, he's not the same horse to me this year on his other three starts. And I think he's sort of there to be got at. I'm sort of with you on Waterville, Bruce. You know, he's got the same form as Trawlerman, really. And while he was more impressive in many ways in how he won the Irish Cesarewitch, you know, he's 4-1 and Trawlerman's 20+. So, yeah, he's a runner, but he's not interesting at that price. I mean, The one that I think is just an absolutely wrong price, who have not really got to the bottom of yet, is Coltrane. You know, he's turned up in a run against Trushan and Kyprios and Stradivarius, and he wasn't disgraced at all in his first try against them in the Goodwood Cup. And then he came out and actually beat Trushan at Doncaster. Now, the ratings say he's still got an awful lot to find, but that's because they didn't end up in a little bit sort of a heap in that race. There was horses that had no real sort of right being that close that were. But I think that just shows that Coltrane's still a progressive stayer. And the idea that he's twice the price of Waterville is mad. I really respect Eldon Aydarov, but this is a race where I do want to be getting involved probably each way too, especially with Coltrane there, because maybe, you know, Trushan at his best would beat him almost certainly. But I've not got the faith that he's going to turn up and show his best here that I would have had in previous years. So yeah, Coltrane each way for me.
A quick question then.
Yeah, sure.
Does he need to be at his best to win this? I mean, that form behind Kyprios and Stradivarius, yes, he was third, but I mean, I looked at it and thought a reproduction of that would probably be good enough.
It's got him £1 ahead of Eldon Aydarov. It's got him £2 or £3 ahead of what Coltrane did in beating him. You know, to say it would be good enough would be, I think that would be overfacing it, but he'd probably be rightful fav on this year's form, but only just.
Do you know what? What would worry me with Trushan? And I thought last time out, Holly Doyle, it's very hard to think of a time when she's given a horse a bad ride. I think she's absolutely brilliant. She is superb and deserves every bit of praise she gets. I didn't think it was great last time. I thought she had a fight with the horse all the way around and was desperate to hold him up way off the pace. And he's burning energy because he's having a fight with her all the way around. And I think by the time she's asking questions, he's got too much ground to make up. I want to see him settle much better and not be, like I say, tugging for his head 10 lengths off the pace this time. So I think I think this will be a really interesting heat.
She'll be hoping Tom goes off really hard on Quickthorn, I would imagine. Because, yeah, you're right. It was that part of the reason the big performance came in on the Northumberland Plate is because she was able to bury him behind horses all the way and present him as late as possible. So, yeah, that's definitely a consideration. And, yeah, Quickthorn here, we saw what he did in Longshot last time. He just went off far too hard. He's basically...
That was mad.
He's just implacable. He's just a complete nutcase. So he's just going to have to do that again, I think. And it might make that little bit better for Trushan because a real... you know, Doddle wouldn't suit him. He'd go Tonto, I think. But that's got to be your hope if you're Holly Doyle.
Absolutely. Interesting start to the card. And another interesting heat at 2:00. It's the Kipco British Champions Sprint over 6 furlongs, Group 1. Creative Force won it last year. He's joint favourite at 5-1 with Rohan. Art Power is 6s. Kinross is 6s. Perfect Power, 11s. Brad the Brief, 12, along with Naval Crown and Tenebrism. And it's 20 bar. Let's see what the extra place situation is as things stand. Nice. William Hill, Skybet, Bet365, Betfair and Paddy Power, all a fifth. 5 places in this 18-runner heat. I mean, it is competitive. You're going to need plenty of extra places, but that is good news. Keith, we'll see whether Trushan can defend his crown in the first. Can Creative Force defend his crown in the second?
He can, and I think at 5-1 that we're seeing now, he's getting to be a very backable price to do so. Is the drift on the basis of his draw? Because I wouldn't be too worried about that. He's in, you know, he's got Naval Crown, who's one of the likelier pace angles. Zoda's stablemate, 3 stalls away. Gobert's Go is the likeliest to read overall, and he's 3 or 4 stalls away. I can see this being mostly one big group, and maybe only proper solo runners on either rail potentially.
I must say, by the way, don't forget as well, Keith, I mean, I remember turning up at this meeting 3 or 4 years ago, no, probably a little longer than that, and thinking, hang on a sec, what's going on here? Basically, you know, it's a very wide track at
Aspen. Yeah.
Halfway down, they had a rail, and they were basically running along a 5-metre strip. Now, I don't know whether that's going to happen here or not.
They do it this meeting, bearing in mind. They do something simple, because the max fields on all the straight course races today are 20. Balmoral's got 20. Normally you'd get 30 plus in these straight course dashes at Ascot. So yes, they definitely do bring the rails in and make it a narrower track. But yeah, so I don't think Creative Force is that bad with the draw. Only one horse since this race got repurposed as the champion sprint, only one horse has won from a higher draw, and that was in the first year, Deacon Blues. But I don't think it's a big issue for Creative Force this year. The the pace is sort of all around him, and the run and the big runners are all in that sort of middle block as well. They're not really on the wings. The one that you've talked about, the five places, I've already availed myself of some of the five places because I looked at this race in the week and thought, Gareth can't be running, he's 33s. And now he's still 20s. I backed him yesterday at 25s, five places. He's right in the thick of the action. He's in seven. You know, he's got Art Power on his outside. Gobert's go two stalls away. So he's going to be in a decent sort of spot if Jim Crowley can pick it. And he's just an improved horse this year. You know, he ran in the Platinum Jubilee here. And he finished, he only beat three home. But he travelled better that race than his final position let on. And since then, he's gone to France. He won a Group 3 in Deauville pretty handily. And then the next time he turned up and he finished third, beating only a length in the Maurice de Guest. And first Highfield Princess, obviously she's gone on to win in Unthorpe and just be one of the best, pretty much the best sprinter around in Europe at least, apart from when the Aussies come over and spike us. And Minzal was second, and obviously he won the Sprint Cup at Haydock next time. You know, Rohan was behind him, Naval Crown was behind him, Perfect Power was behind him. This is just an improved horse, in line with the Hills yard as a whole, because Charlie Hills has had a great year. So I don't think you need to do too many mental gymnastics to explain this as a six-year-old who's running in the form of his life. And I think he should be 10s or 12s, and you can back him at 20s, 25s with five places.
And the last five winners of this, 11-2, 16-1, 33-1, 28-1 and 10-1. So it's certainly a race where you can take a cut at something at a big price. Let's see what Stuart's going to go for.
Yeah, I'm taking two against the field here. It's one of those races that you can see a number of them running really well. I mean, I can sort of, my short list for horses I thought could win it was quite a long list. I have narrowed it down. I take on board what Keith's saying about Creative Force, and I like his chances. The only thing is, it ended up pointing me towards his stablemate, Naval Crown, who has raced against Creative Force twice this year and beaten him both times, and he's double the price. The reason for that is he has sort of, well, definitely underwhelmed last time. I thought he ran a decent race in Deauville, and you could argue that he looked far bigger danger at six furlongs than he did at six and a half at the finish line. He just sort of faded towards the end, but he ran a big race at Deauville. Haydock last time, he was very disappointing, and he was a 3-1 favourite that day. But any horse can be forgiven a bad run, I feel. And yeah, I just think he's got the course and distance form, obviously won at the Royal Meeting. I don't see why he's double the price of a horse he's beaten twice this season. The other horse that I'm going to put up for this is also a course and distance from the Royal Meeting is Perfect Power, who is another who has slightly gone off the boil, you could argue, this season. He went and won. It was the Commonwealth Cup for the three-year-olds. He went and won that pretty impressively and went to the July Cup at Newmarket as a 9-4 favourite. That was a hotter sprint than this. And yeah, all right, he disappointed that day. He was beaten five lengths. But, you know, he was a 9-4 favourite that day, and that was on good to firm ground. He's a horse that you would argue is more of the stamina variety than the out-and-out speed variety at this trip. And I just think the softer ground will play to his strengths. I was talking to Richard Birch earlier today, and he made a very strong case for Perfect Power that very much swayed me to add him to my staking plan. And yeah, I thought I would pass that on to listeners, because obviously Birchie is as shrewd as they come, yourself and Keith obviously included in that.
The thing with Naval Crown, it's a good point you make there, Stu, is I think Doyle's the one person I'll be watching straight out the stalls in this race, because what he chooses to do could be absolutely pivotal to the race. He tends to go not quite on the front, but he's right up there all the time, and he's in 16. Will he go for the rail? That's what won him the Platinum Jubilee, really, wasn't it? Or will he try and join and be in a central group? I think that's going to be the most interesting tactical part of this race.
Keith, you're going to put me off Rohan?
Absolutely not. No, he's been laid out and aimed at this again. You know, his Ascot record is phenomenal. The only time he's been beaten here was in this race last year. He made them look like handicappers in the Ben Gough last time, and that race has generally been a very good try up to this one. I think his price is what it deserves to be. He's a little bit further away from the action than I envisage it being, you know, six. He's the lowest drawn of the big runners.
But he sits back and does his own thing anyway. He does.
He should be fine. You know, Art Power's an eight, so he'll hopefully be there. And Gobert's goes, you know, he's nine. He's only three stalls away. So can't see that being too big an issue. There's a wee outside chance he gets caught in a wing, but I can't imagine it being much of an issue. But he's his price for me. He's the price he should be. Okay. But I certainly wouldn't put you off.
Thank you very much. That's a tough race. So is our next one, the 240, the Kipco British Champions, Fillies and Mare Stakes, Group 1, over a mile and a half, 14 runners. Emily Upjohn, current favourite at 4-1, Eternal Pearl, 5-1. Mimikyu is 13-2, Sila Rosa is 13-2. Eshada, our third defending champion of the day, is 9-1, and then it's 10-1, Sweet Lady, 14-1. Bar extra place news, everyone is four places as things stand, except William Hill and Sky Bet, who are both a fifth, the five. Don't forget, you can place all your bets and get all the bookie offers on the new Racing Post app. Download it now if you haven't done so. Right then, Stu, over to you first for the Fillies and Mares. A bit of a head scratcher, this, isn't it?
Yeah, this is a tough race. I was looking at this and it's one of those races. I've gone round and round in circles and I've come up with what I think might be a plan for how the race is going to unfold.
Tell us all.
I feel it's good soft ground and you've a lot of horses in there that want further. Sila Rosa obviously won at Longchamp over a mile six. The likes of Ashada and the Gosden horse that Rab Havlin rides, Mimikyu, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but they both ran over a mile six last time. Eternal Pearl ran as if all the world wanting further, looking out pace and staying on well at Newmarket last time. And I think if you've got softer ground and a lot of horses that are going to want to make it more of a test at the distance than it actually is, I think it might set up for a closer and it might set up for a bit of a pace collapse. And if that is the case, the horse that appeals to me is Stay Alert of Huey Morrison's, who is probably the horse in the race with the biggest stamina question mark. But I feel, and that's a weird horse to put up in a race that you think is going to become a stamina test. She's been racing over a mile two most of the season. The one time she tried a mile four was probably her worst performance of the season. Last time at Newbury over the mile three, I thought she was very impressive. She got trapped in a pocket. And really, once she got out about a furlong out, she made up ground so fast. And I just think if she's able to stay with them, get relaxed, I think she'll be able to finish really well. And at 12, 14 to one, I think she's a big price in what is a wide open race, and I can knock holes in a lot of them. So I've wanted to take a bit of a flyer on
it. Okay, Stay Alert for Stuart. What about you, Keith?
Had a little bit similar to Stuart. Went sort of round and round a little bit in this race, and eventually sort of thought, there's almost always one race on Champions Day. I think, how the hell's that happened? So this is the one I'm going to play very small stakes on a couple of really big outsiders, and just hope for the best, really. Because like Thunder Kiss is the first one, she's 50-1. That is a massive price. She's a proper soft ground horse as well. Form up against, you know, the Paddy Power Stakes, she was second in last time, behind Duke Sessa, who ran fine in France subsequently. You know, that form doesn't, she's not a 50-1 chance on that bit of form. You know, there's worse horses than her in the race, and she just sets up for this time of year. It's been all about this time of year. And I can see her outrunning 50-1. And the other one, which I might get shouted at for, but when I saw that Royal Year that Sila Rosa won, and yeah, she's a proper runner in this race. If I was playing a sort of standard win bet, it might be Sila Rosa. But I watched that race and I backed Very Elegant in that race. And I thought, you know the problem with Very Elegant? She's just totally ill-suited to France and French racing. So
why?
Stu,
tell me more.
Oh, she just went mental. She just wants well-run races. She's not good as, she's won the Melbourne Cup, you know, she's better suited to those races where they go a more even gallop, where she can settle and where she can finish strongly off, when not when everybody's sprinting, but when everybody's trying to last. That's how she did it in Melbourne Cup, and that's how she's not had a chance to do it in France. So my sort of, yeah, in the hope that maybe what Stu's pointing out there happens and they have a good test of stamina and they go a decent clip, I can see her finishing strongly up that hill. And, you know, she's 25-1 here. That is, look, she's, on what she's done in France this year, she deserves to be that price. But
yeah,
she's basically
on what
favorite.
She's done elsewhere, she's pretty much fav, isn't she?
Well, she was just about fav for the Royal League last time. You know,
exactly.
It's a
she's
very
top
quick...
on Racing Post ratings. I'm so glad you raised Very Elegant, because I looked down the race and I thought, hang on a sec, this is the wonder from Down Under who connections were going Garrity because she didn't get into the arc, but she's 25-1 to win this. What's going on? So you've yeah. provided a plausible reason. I'm champing at the bit here.
Yeah, I wouldn't put you off at all. That sort of price, you know, she's just that good, or she certainly was less than a year ago. So you can certainly take that cut at it. And yeah, she needs things to go her way with the way they race in Europe. And therefore, France was worse for her than Britain or Ireland would be. But there's something you need to take on trust here. But this is 25-1 shot, you know, this is... You can afford to do that when the horses are that price. So I think she gets one more chance in the hope that she gets a race that suits her better than these French races she's been running in.
Well, let's face it, Keith, if she won at 25-1, I would say there will be a lot of people kicking themselves very hard and saying, why did we not get involved? Quick word, Keith, on Emily Upjohn, the fav. She had an interesting season, hasn't she? But I guess the last run is a bit of a turn-off at her best form. She's worthy fav, isn't she?
I was hoping they put her in short for this, you know, because then you could just go, yeah, I'm going to get after her. You know, I expected her to be maybe 9-4. And I go, right, no, that's she's wanting to oppose. 4-1 just gives that bit of room for people to justifiably back her. On what she did in the Oaks and what she did in the Musadora, I think you can say she deserves to be right up with the contenders for this race. I'm not interested really at 4-1, but nor am I roaring with laughter at the shortness of a big hype horse either at that sort of price. She's clearly got loads of potential that might still be untapped. And you know what Gosden's like for laying horses out for this speed, and he's done it very successfully for a long time. So yeah, it's look, another instance where if somebody says I'm backing Emily Upjohn, I'd say, well, you're getting 4-1 about her, so you crack on. But she's not for me.
She's not for you. The ones for you. Go on, Stu.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think she's one of those horses that we might, at the end of the day, be looking back on and going, how was she allowed to go off 4-1? She was 3-1 for the King George against Pile Driver, Torquato Tasso, Mishriff, Broom and Westover. That is a vastly more talented bunch of horses at this trip. And yeah, I she was disappointing that day. The long break isn't encouraging. She's obviously got first-time headgear as well. There are reasons.
25 lengths she got ironed out there, Stu.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's that thing, like you could be looking at the end of the day going, yeah, how was she allowed to go off that price? You could be looking at the end of the day going, gosh, she was, she never quite lived up to what it looked like at the start of the season.
Indeed, an intriguing contest. Go on, Keith.
Yeah, she was the 3-1 that day in the King George. I mean, a few people, myself included, that day were saying that was clever cookie territory in terms of, you know, overreacting King George prices. The 3-1 there, just I don't think that reflected a chance in the King George, to be quite honest.
Okay,
right. And obviously she didn't turn up, so I'm not claiming vindication there, but she just, nothing she'd done justified being 3-1 for that race.
Okay, so the boys fancy some long shots here. We've got Staler at 14-1 for Stuart Riley, and Keith's taken a couple at big prices. Very Elegant 25, Thunder Kiss 50-1. Back in just a minute.
The world's number one horse racing app just got better. Download the brand new Racing Post app for free to experience our new game-changing odds comparison, exclusive daily big name tipping, and unrivaled app-only content. Head to the App Store to download it and get started.
Welcome back to the second part of the postcast. It's Bruce Millington, Stuart Riley, and Keith Melrose. We're halfway through the 2022 Kipco British Champions Day card. Next up, we've got the 320, which is the QE2. Queen Elizabeth Second Stakes, a Group 1 over a mile, 655 grand to the winner, 9 go to post, and In Spiral is favourite for the Gosdens and Frankie at 11-10. Modern Games is 4-1. The Revenant, who won this a couple of years ago, is 6s. Jadumi is 8s. And then it's 18-1. Bar. Keith, you can go first with this one. Do we just look at it and say, yeah, Fav a good thing, or do we need to delve deeper?
I don't know. Are there any decent each way ones on this? Is there not
well,
four? I'd be surprised.
You know, it's all 5th-3. You mathematically, they just get killed with their 9 exactly. Runners, 11 to 10 Fav. You know, it's all standard.
Yeah, well, it was definitely holding out your hand and hope more than expectation. But no, it's that sort of race where I can't see anything outside the first two in the market really winning this. Modern Games is possibly being slightly underestimated. The only horse that's beat him over a mile this year has been Baid. And he went and won that race. The run in Woodbine last time, when he won the Woodbine Mile, he's got an RPR of 120 for that. We could not have rated that lower. That was a big performance. So I think he's maybe been very slightly underestimated relative to Inspiral. If I wanted a big price each way one, I still think there's a little bit of untapped potential in Check and Challenge. And Ascot should suit him. He's the sort of horse that travels really well in races, and the straight mile at Ascot really rewards those sort of horses. So I'd have a little look at him as an each way bet, and he might be the one I end up backing. But it's not a race I'll be getting heavily involved in. And I do think that, I'd struggle to see one of the top two in the market not winning it. But the sort of each way thieving bet is there is Check and Challenge.
Check and Challenge, 28-1. So you get better than 5-1, a place there. Okay, one of my favourite features on Racing Post Members Club, on the pro card, is the past winners, and that tells us that Baid won it last year at 2-1. God, wouldn't you like to go back 12 months and get 2-1 Baid, given what we know now? The Revenant was 5-1 when he won the year before. Stuart Riley, can you give the Revenant a chance, or do you agree with Keith that it's the front two that have got this between them? Might even say it's the front one that's got it between her.
Yeah, I probably agree with the tail end of that statement. I think Modern Games probably is the danger. The Revenant's just had one of those seasons that has been a bit underwhelming. Was beaten by Dream Loper, who is a good horse but probably isn't in Inspiral's class, and Erevan as well, who obviously placed home in Spiral last time. So there's not a great deal in there to suggest he's going to take the jump forward needed here.
It might not be even soft enough for him as well. That's the other thing with the Revenant.
You've also got to factor in for the Revenant, he's a 7-year-old. He's got to give weight to Modern Games as a 3-year-old. He's got to give even more weight to Inspiral as a 3-year-old filly. So it's a tough ask for him. I think it probably is Inspiral's race to lose. I mean, she's already had a race that was hers to lose this season and managed to lose it. So it's not completely out of the question. I thought I was at Newmarket when she got beat by a Prosperous Voyage in the Falmouth, and it wasn't sort of the performance that you went there hoping to see. She bounced back in the Prujac Lamawa, and I think she probably goes very, very well here. I think this time of year, it's almost this meeting, I almost try and approach it more like an Aintree or a Punchestown than a Cheltenham. It's not necessarily the meeting that these horses have been targeted at all season long. And they've been built to a fever pitch for it. It sort of comes after other things, and you do get some weird results. But she's had a very light campaign because she was set back early on, and he comes in much fresher than a lot of her rivals, and I think probably just going to be too good.
Lovely stuff. Let's move on to the race of the day. 4:00, the Kipco Champion Stakes over a mile and a quarter. Group one, 737 grand to the winner. Baid, the fantastic Baid, after 10 races unbeaten, comes to his final race course appearance. I think we hoped it would be in the Arc, but instead he's waited for this, probably got the right sort of ground. And he is no bigger than 1-4 to crown a fabulous career with another victory. Adair, last year's Derby winner, is 5-1, and then it's Baybridge 11-1, My Prospero 28s and 40 bar, 9 run. So if you do fancy a bit of each way thieving, that might be the way in. A lot of people, though, will just sit back and admire Baid and hope he wins. Stu, will you be one of those people, or will you be having a bet? And can you see Baid somehow fluffing his lines on his final appearance?
I can't see Baid fluffing his lines, no. I think they have, they've been very strong about this race for a long time. William Haggis has always wanted to run him here. They skipped the arc specifically for this race. He's been, and I've been trained to the minute. Jim Crowley is as cool as they come. He is wondrously talented. I just can't see him bluffing it. So no, I think he's gonna get the fairy tale ending that he deserves.
How far will he win by, do you think?
That's a tough question, because he's not generally been a horse that's gone and won by impressive margins until his last start at York, where obviously he absolutely blew them away. I think the ground will probably blunt his speed just a little bit. I don't know, 4-6 lengths?
4-6 lengths. Blimey, that's a wide old spread. Okay, Bide wins it. Is there a forecast? Is there an each way alternative, Stu?
Yeah, the horse that I would play either each way or stick in the forecast is probably Bay Bridge. He's a classy horse. He's definitely, you know, up to this level. He's your typical Sir Michael Stout improver. He's a horse who, I think it's interesting, obviously he came out and won early doors at Sandown and looked very impressive. That was on good ground. His two starts since have been on good to firm, and obviously he was second at the Royal Meeting in the Prince of Wales over course and distance on good to firm, and then just outclassed slightly in the Eclipse at Sandown on good to firm. He's been kept fresh since. The given the ground's probably in his favour. He's an out and out specialist at this distance, and you know, more than double the price of that AR. He's probably the one I would take to fill that forecast.
Okay. That is really a banned phrase, typical Stout improver, by the way, because he doesn't train a horse that isn't a typical Stout improver. But apart from that, very good, Stu. What's your assessment of the Champion Stakes, Keith?
If I'm having a bet, it'll be very much along the same lines as Stu, the sort of Bide, Baybridge forecast. I have two hopes for this race, mainly. One, watch and enjoy, lads, because Bide, I hope he does. Hope he gives us the performance that we're hoping for. I don't think he'll win by miles and miles. I don't think Crowley will press the button. Even if he's absolutely travelling all over at the bottom of the hill, two out, I don't think Crowley will press the button. He'll try. He knows this is the stiffest test of stamina the horse has faced, and will prioritise getting the win over trying to break the scale. So maybe I'm wrong, and I hope maybe we do see a big yawning gap. But the other thing I hope for at this race is that they realise ADR, or they maybe give up the idea of trying to make ADR win a mile two group one. He's a mile four horse, really. And he'd have won a lot of races if they'd campaigned him as a mile four horse. But they've done that old Coolmore thing they used to do. They used to always, when a horse won a derby or something, they'd always try and get a 10 furlong group one into them, just to help their stallion value, really.
Isn't it sad that when being dominant over a mile and a quarter is a turn-off for the bloodstock industry?
Mile and a half?
A mile and a half, pardon me, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think maybe it's a little bit self-fulfilling when all these horses were Coolmore because, you know, there was literally a National Hunt stud next door or in the same yard. I don't actually know how it works there, but basically Coolmore have National Hunt stallions as well. So anything that was close to that line ended up drifting over it potentially. But yeah, I think he'd have won a lot of good mile and a half races if he campaigned him that way. I think there's a little bit of trying to force a square peg into a round hole by making him into a mile two horse. Excellent horse though he is. So that's partly why I think the Bide Bay Bridge is a way to play the forecast. But I'm just hoping for a big run and a big win from Bide. He's been a great horse to watch.
Keith, would Bide have won the arc?
Yeah, he would have.
Yeah, he would, wouldn't he? He definitely would. But anyway, that argument has been lost. And let's hope he wins impressively and gives the crowd something to cheer about, because racing does need superstars. Stu, I'm going to very quickly ask you about Bide. You say you don't, you know, might not win by half the track. If he wins by three or four or whatever, even two, does he retire with everyone saying, look, that was fine, he couldn't have done any more in his career, brilliant, what a superstar, lovely? Or is there still that kind of, still didn't quite really see what, did we get to the bottom of him? Did we, you know, is there still that nagging doubt about what he might have achieved? Do you get what I'm saying with this?
I do, yeah. I think he's one of those horses who is sort of, suffers a bit from what I call big buck syndrome, in that you know, he's come out and he's won all these races and he's, you know, done it impressively, but it's a bit samey. And, you know, it was impressive to see them step up at York last time and he produced the most impressive performance that he has to date. And you think, yeah, like, he's a bit like See the Stars in that he doesn't win by massive differences.
Whoa. Wash your mouth out. Come off it.
But hang on. But See the Stars was so inventively campaigned.
That's the difference.
Yeah, and that's what I was getting at. Like, he's not winning by massive differences. He's doing absolutely what he has to do, and he's a very, very good horse. You know, to sort of take him to that next level into people's hearts and minds and be a horse that people talk about in 10 years' time, like we still do with Frankel, it needs that sort of, that either a really dominant performance.
Yeah, it needs the signature performance, doesn't it?
Yeah.
York's
that sort of campaign where you look at it and you just go, oh, like they have a lot of fun there. They were a Guineas, then they went up to a Derby, then they were back to a mile two, then they were back up to a mile four. Like, it just needs that almost flair.
I guess, Keith, he's slightly handicapped in terms of the reputation he's built by the fact he didn't have a classic campaign, isn't it?
Partly, yeah. I mean, in terms of what he's done on ratings and stuff, York's taken all the pressure off. York was the big day. That's the day he smashed up a good horse. You know, Mishriff, he is a far St. Nicholas Abbey type of horse, especially at York. That was the day where he just all of a sudden went stratospheric. If it wasn't for York, I think we'd be looking at this. If he'd won by three that day, I think we'd be looking at this race tomorrow very differently, you know. I think we'd be really expecting and hoping and just longing for that big performance from Bayou that still hadn't come. But it did come. It came at York. Pressure's off.
This is like the flat pack now, isn't it? We're getting into the real nerdy territory here. Keith, if you've not ever watched the flat pack, that's Keith's brilliant show that he does with Ross Briley every Wednesday. I'm sure this week will be a cracker when they'll be looking back on all the Ascot action. We've just got one more chapter to write in the 2022 Kipco British Champions Day story. It's the 440, the traditional finale, the handicap. Used to be for apprentices, didn't it? But now they're all riding it. It's a 1 mile straight Balmoral handicap, 103 grand to the winner. We've got 20 runners. Let's see what the each way extra places story is. Paddy Power, Sky Bet and Bet365, as well as Betfair, go 6 places. Everyone else goes 5. So could be a great each way betting heat. Blue for you, 15-2. Tyrrhenian Sea is 17-2. Migration is 9s. And then it's 10 Bashkirova, 10 Sweet Believer, 12 good old Escobar. I'd love to see Escobar win this. 14 Astro King, 14 Montaseep, 14 Auburn, 14 Symbolize, 16 Bar. Blimey, Keith, what a tough way to finish the card. Or is it? Have you got one for us?
You can't really be hugely confident in finding the winner here. The worst I'm putting up is the sort of horse that is the first name on the team sheet if you're doing a play spot, for instance. And obviously, with those each way terms we've got, rates is a really good each way bet. You mentioned the flat pack, very, very kind words for it there. One of the biggest angles we've been hammering all year on that show is at Ascot, you want form over further, ideally on the straight course at Ascot. And this is a race that's brought together horses like Migration, who's a selection, along with, you know, horses like Safe Voyage is in here. Safe Voyage is a 7 furlong horse. You know, Mum's Tipple's in there, borderline sprinter. And yet Migration, until last time, thought this is a proper middle distance horse, but he had run a career best, I think it was, over a mile at Newbury last time we last saw him in April, and he's been held for a race like this ever since. You know, he's got it's a big old mark he's got to carry, but that form is extremely good. Modern News was the winner of that race, and obviously he's going to do some great things outside of handicaps too. So yeah, Migration for me is almost he's a play spot banker in this sort of race. You know, unless you think you've really found one, the sort of horse that's bound to run in the first 4 or 5, as long as he ends up on massively the wrong side, is exactly the horse you want. So yeah, Migration's the one that makes a difference for me.
Okay, Migration for Keith. Who for Stu?
Yeah, this is one of those races, as Keith said, it's a tough one. I was looking at it thinking, well, you know, it's good that there's 6 places, but I could have 6 goes at this and still not find the winner. The one that I've been tempted into is the John and Thady Gosden horse, Magical Morning. Was 3rd in the race last year off a mark of 106, comes in this year off 105 and has Benoit de la Sayette's £3 claim added to that as well. And that was enough for me to be swayed, obviously, on last year's form. It isn't just a case of, you know, he's been going down the ratings since he's won this year at Doncaster back in June as well. And yeah, I think he's one of those horses that he should go well. He's got first time cheek pieces on as well, which is always nice to see when you fancy.
Okay, brilliant. Thank you very much, chaps. Loads more Saturday and Sunday tips to come. Stick with us.
Tis I, Dave Orton. Join me and an excellent panel every Saturday on Racing Post Live in association with Betfair. Tips, previews, live race reactions, and of course some raucous laughs along the way. That's Racing Post Live every Saturday. Subscribe to the YouTube channel so you don't miss a thing.
Welcome back to the final part of the postcast from the Racing Post, brought to you by Racing Post Members Club, Bruce Millington, Stuart Riley and Keith Melrose. We've done the Ascot races. Now let's see what else the boys fancy over the weekends. Loads more racing, as you'd imagine. Ascot is the big show, but by far not the only show in town. We've got good racing on Sunday, so we'll see what the boys fancy before they give their naps to us. Keith, what have you got for us?
You can tell it's October. The 2 months where I have the sort of crossover with my chasers and whatever flat division I'm doing, it's April and October. And two races I'm going to mention here are the Catterick Dash, the C15 at Catterick on Saturday, and the Durham National, 3-mile-5 handicap chase at Sedgefield on Sunday. It's the C50. The Catterick Dash, I've had a lot of people in my ear this week, including Ross, as it happens, telling me Count Dorsey. He's evidently got a good record in the race. He won it in 2019. He was second in 2020. And I think that was the best run of his life. He travelled really well through a race at York last week. I'm just not certain. He's the sort of horse that's going to finish in the first two or three and not win. I think he's happy finish. He's the sort of horse that's happy finishing second or third. So this race, it's a really tough race, actually. But the one I'm going to take a wee chance on at double figure odds is Tad Deed, who has run some, he was second in the Stewards' Cup, and none of the three races yet have really gone his way, or in a couple of cases, there were listed races that are a little bit above him. He's drawn in 13 here, which I think when they often come down that near side when it gets softer at Catterick, and he's got Taylor Fisher on, who, look, every £7 claimer gets claimed to be good value for their claim, but Taylor Fisher's operating at a 14% strike rate and taking £7 off his horse's back. So yeah, Tab Deed in the Catterick Dash for me, which will be a great race to watch. So I hope I'd see more of these races this year. I want more races for good sprinters over lightning quick 5 furlongs. Then the 350 at Sedgefield Sunday, that's the Durham National. Bit of the sublime of the ridiculous here, because last year this race was won by Hewick, pulled a massive stroke to win that race of 142. This year, yeah. Exactly. This year it is in essence a 0-130, because it's a 0-145, 0-145 officially, but the top weight is the Two Amigos.
Nine runners is very disappointing, isn't it?
Well,
a little race, isn't it?
A little bit, but what's really disappointing is this race is worth $28,000. The Prelude Handicap Chase at Market Raisin tomorrow is worth $50,000, and that's got six. That's the one that's burst my net in. The Two Amigos, you might just be able to pick this lot up and carry them. It is a very weak Durham National to me by the look of things. And the Two Amigos, when last seen, was second off this mark to Revels Hill. Now, Revels Hill, if you don't know him already, he's probably going to be in the top two or three in the betting when they put out the Welsh National anti-post markets. He's a sort of Harry Fry, slow-burning, fashionable stay in chaser this winter, and in a speed test at Taunton, which wouldn't have suited the Two Amigos particularly, he acquitted himself very well against Revels Hill. He's been lucky to get in off the same mark again. This is a much easier race, and you know, in what's effectively an 0-130. I'm not sure Sedgefield's the very best track in the world for him, and I think he maybe want it a bit softer, but I don't think that matters. I think he's a cut above, so I'll be having a look at him as well.
Okay, thank you, Keith. What have you got for us, Stuart, this weekend?
My first fancy is at Leopardstown on Saturday in the 3:45. It's the Group 3 Kilvallen Stakes, and it's a horse trained by Jessica Harrington called bold discovery. Aidan O'Brien has the favourite in the race called Cairo, who I just think is vulnerable. Dropped to 7 furlongs last time, beaten at Dundalkin. I want to take him on. Bold discoveries, I thought, was very impressive on debut at Mace over the distance. And yeah, as a horse that's been bought since by Mark Chan, I think will go very well. The other race that caught my eye is the 337 at Market Raisin, Symphony Group Prelude Handicap Chase. Paul Nichols has a horse in there, Tamarack de Matan, who had a wind off 4 starts ago and sort of took a bit of time to come through that. Was second in the Great Wood Gold Cup at Newbury, and has won last time at Plumpton, and looks like the sort of horse who had a lot of ability, and that's finally starting to get tapped into. So I think there's still room in his mark off 1:40.
Brilliant. Well done, mate. And Jumps fans, that meeting after Ascot, the day after at Kempton, is always a good one. And we've got So Royal. So Alan King, regardless of what Trushan does, he'll be hoping good old So Royal gets the job done at 4:00 in the 5-runner listed race. OK, time for the naps. If you're only having one bet this weekend, who would it be?
Postcast Naps, presented to you by Racing Post Members Club.
We'll start with Stuart Riley.
Trushan.
In the 1:25 at Ascot on Saturday. Lovely. Thank you very much, Stu and Keith.
Each way on Gareth in the sprint.
And that is at 2:00. Brilliant. Thank you very much to Stuart Riley. Thanks to Keith Morris. Thanks to our brilliant producer, Jack Reeve. Most of all, though, thank you for listening. And I must give a shout out to Monday's Racing Post, which contains the big jump off, a fantastic, massive pullout with everything you need for the upcoming jump season. Hope you enjoy that. Hope you have a fantastic weekend. Bet responsibly. And we're back next Friday for another postcast.